Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the midweek edition of the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston and I'm filming in again for Rich Fay, who is again off, and I'm alongside Tyrone Marshall for today's episode. Tyrone, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Stephen. Very good. Looking forward to hearing about your trip to Krakow at the weekend. Having been there several times myself, including on a 4-day stag do once, I know what it can do to you. So I can understand why your voice is a bit croaky. I'm also gutted Rich is off, to be honest. I presume he's surrounded by buckets of his own tears at the moment after Wrexham's pathetic collapse at Blackburn Rovers last night. I was absolutely delighted to see that, the undoubted highlight of the FA Cup fourth round weekend for me.
But just for the sake of balance, time, what was the Shrewsbury Wrexham score the other week?
Can you not remember
that conveniently?
No, I can't remember.
Yeah, okay,
fair enough.
Krakow was really good, but you can tell by my voice is a bit hoarse. We did actually get approached by someone in the bar and he said, "Are you lads on a stag do?" I was a bit insulted because I don't think we're quite at that age yet. So I went, "No, we're just having a cultured weekend." We did the touristy bits. We obviously had a few beers as well. It's all part of the fun. It's quite cheap across there, isn't it? As you'll know yourself. So plenty of alcohol was had. I'm just recovering, Ty, even though it's a Tuesday afternoon as we record this podcast. Anyways, today's episode, we're going to get into a few transfer bits as usual. You're going to provide a bit of colour, apparently, to the Newport County trip at the weekend. And in the second part, we're going to look at all of the posts Sir Alex Ferguson signings, the 60 of them. Yeah, I mean, that's quite a task, isn't it? So we'll see how we get on with that. But we'll explain what we're going to do in the second part a bit more in this podcast. So to begin with, Ty, you made the trip to Wales on Sunday afternoon for the FA Cup. The magic of the FA Cup was all well intact. It looked like it was going to be a really straightforward task for United, but it was actually quite an entertaining game in the end, wasn't it? What was the experience like? You got any anecdotes or stories from the trip?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was something, I was going to say something different, but I went with City in 2019, so it wasn't that different, to be honest. It hadn't changed an awful lot, apart from, I think they put a temporary stand behind one of the goals as well. I mean, it was good. It wasn't as good as Krakow, I think it's fair to say. But it was, you know, it was something different. It was pretty relaxed. You walk in and we could just walk around the whole stadium, basically walked around the perimeter of the pitch. But we had been pre-warned about the press facilities, and obviously I knew with going with City that we didn't get a press seat in the actual press box 4 years ago. So there was little chance of getting one with United, given, I guess, United always kind of attracts a few more people. So there was the extra press seats were basically just seats within the stand. I mean, I was like maybe 20 seats away from the actual press box with laptop on knee. So it was one of those where you dare open your laptop until a few minutes before kickoff, really. And then obviously you're surrounded by fans who are jumping up every couple of minutes while you've got your laptop on your knee. So it's authentic, I guess, would be the best way to describe it.
Did your battery last that long then, Ty? So when did, because the batteries on our laptops, when you have the brightness quite high, they are quite poor. And whenever you're at a game, you do need a bit of charge.
You do, yeah. So I'd made sure it was fully charged, as I think everyone had. And it did last. It was getting pretty dicey towards the end. And when the game was stopped briefly for a medical emergency, which was, of course, the priority, and without wishing to make light of it, it was one of those where the game stopped for a medical emergency. And I was thinking, this is, you know, I think a lot of people were thinking, this isn't great news for batteries here, that which are running out. But thankfully, it was sorted fairly quickly and the game could continue. But that was a slightly dicey moment for our laptops. So yeah, it just about lasted. The Wi-Fi fell apart, unsurprisingly. You know, they're probably used to Radio Wales, commentating from there, and a couple of locals, I guess. So the Wi-Fi didn't survive. So we had some help with production in the office, which probably saved a bit of battery life as well, saving us having to drag pictures in and all that kind of stuff that, you know, from games, the the tedious part that means you end up inevitably missing a goal or a red card or some kind of vital moment where you're trying to find a picture of Rasmus Højlund or something like that. So yeah, we had some help in that regard. And then, I mean, post-match, I attempted to do the mix zone, of which there wasn't one really. But
I was just about to say, was there actually access? And I presume, no. Obviously, press conference-wise with Ten Hag, I've been out the loop. I've not seen any thoughts.
Yeah, there was a press conference. It was in the same room as the City one, actually. Basically, the opposite side of the ground in one of the suites, the education suite there. So Ten Hag went and did that. And Samuel went and did that. And I just saw the transcript afterwards, which made for entertaining reading, given the depth of the grilling he got on Marcus Rashford. So that was
something's gone on with Marcus Rashford, has there? Not so anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard while you've been away. he's been doing similar things to you, I think, last week.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe not quite as much booze, to be fair. Yeah, he's had a similar approach. So yeah, I attempted to do the mix out, of which there wasn't one, but well, United press officers said you're welcome to hang around by the TV crews and try and get anyone. But MUTV managed to find three players through MUTV, but none of them would speak to the written press, which is another damning indictment against United this season. I mention it all the time on here, and I'm sure plenty of fans thinking cry me a river to us journalists who get in for free and have a great experience. But the inability of players to speak to us this season is just a constant issue. And I think, you know, it's borderline pathetic, to be honest. They've won twice and drawn once this season, and not a single player has stopped. United have failed to put a single player up. I can't recall, after a defeat this season, I can't recall a single player stopping in the mix zone or being put up in the mix zone to talk about it. You know, other Premier League teams lose games and their players stop and speak. You know, I think someone come to Southampton, they lost 9-0 twice within a year, and on both occasions a player stopped and spoke about it. United lose a game, and it seems it's beyond this set of players to actually front up.
You owe it to the fans, surely, to come out and speak, and you can convey your message through the written press.
Yeah, we are a conduit to the fans in a large way, really, especially a paper like the Manchester Evening News, who often will speak to a player and maybe do two stories from it. And also, it's, you know, PR team shouldn't need this explaining to them, but it's a chance to control the narrative if a player speaks. By not letting a player speak, or by failing to put a player up, you're not meaning there's no follow-up stories on Monday. You're meaning people have to find follow-up stories on Monday, or do their opinions on Monday, or do what does this mean for Ten Hag's future? What's the thoughts in the dressing room for Monday? By putting a player up, you're at least putting a positive spin on it, or a view on the dressing room on it. And there's just been none of that this season. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure I could count on two hands the number of times a player has stopped in the mix zone this season. And, you know, United took huge strides in that last season, but it has been awful.
Can I guess who those
season.
Players were? Was it Dalot and Fernandez, by any chance?
Yeah, Dalot and Fernandez, I think, have both done it. Højlund did it with his brother.
Yeah,
after
yeah, he did, you're right.
And
I mean, Kobbie Mainoo spoke to MUTV after Newport, didn't he? I saw that little clip on social media.
Yeah.
And whenever he talks,
yeah,
he talks really well. He's an articulate lad. He's actually quite a confident lad. He's still only 18, of course, and United tend to protect the younger players from the media, from the written press anyways. But it would be fantastic to have Mainoo up. He's just scored his first goal for the club at a wonderful
Absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would have been great to
And there was
hear
two of
him.
Us there. It's not like, I can understand you want to protect him, ease him into it, but there was two of us there. It seems like an ideal opportunity in a fairly low-key setting to put him up. But, you know, apparently not. Fernandes and Bayinda did MUTV as well, but they couldn't. Neither spoke to us, neither would speak to us. So, you know, it's I don't understand it, and I have asked United why it's going on, because, like you say, you can understand it if they lose to a degree. I wouldn't expect a player to stop after every defeat. I think it's human nature. You don't want to talk about it, but I think it should happen after some. But when they've won two FA Cup games this month and had a draw against Tottenham, which wasn't a disastrous result, the fact that no one's speaking after those it makes you think what's going on here. Why are players either being stopped from speaking to us or not wanting to speak to us? And, you know, I don't know what the reasons are. I don't know whether they think they've been unfairly criticised at any point. But, you know, the reality is it's a team losing half of their games by the end of January. So some criticism is kind of understandable. So, yeah, that was a frustrating end to the trip, I think. It is not a good look for Manchester United to have three players doing their in-house TV channel, but failing to provide any of them to the written media, especially when you know, the two people who were there looking to get quotes were two people who had travelled from Manchester for the game. You know, that's a 13-hour day for us, basically, to go and cover United at Newport. And you've just had a positive win. Everything's positive. The background to the club with Ineos is positive at the moment. Yeah, you can't get a player to speak about how positive things are. Yeah, you can get three to do MUTV. It's just, it's not a good look. There's no other way of explaining it beyond that.
Well said, and that's it. Let's hope it changes from now until the end of the season, but I probably won't hold my breath, unfortunately, Ty. I think it's fair to say with that. A few transfer bits then. Balestri's loan looks to be back on to Granada ahead of the January transfer deadline day. His kind of future has been related to Amari Forsens, I guess, because he's out of contract at the end of the season. The club were confident of tying him down to a new deal. Talks have kind of hit a cross point. They've stalled a little bit. And he obviously came on against Newport, didn't he? And I think that's almost felt like Ten Hag trying to say, look, we can give you opportunities, sign a new deal. Because we saw him come on against Wigan as well. He was obviously given his debut. And that kind of feels like the manager saying, right, stay and there will be chances, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, he's clearly not a million miles away, is he? You know, he came on ahead of Palestri and Ahmad at the weekend, which, you know.
Well, there was a lot of surprise at that. But when you look at it for why he's actually done it and the reasons I've just presented before, I think that's, you've got to take it at face value. I wouldn't say he's actually ahead of those players, but it's because of the situation and the context.
Yeah, and there's context around those players because, like you say, Palestri looks like he is going to go on loan again now. I mean, I don't think he's got a future at Manchester United. He's had some bright moments coming off the bench, but he's 22 years old. You know, if he's not good enough now, he's never going to be good enough, is he? And he's not good enough now. So I think it's got to be a loan with a view to selling him in the summer. Ahmad is still someone who you'd like to see given a run or get some games at least and some minutes off the bench in the second half of this season. But he's another player that I think I wouldn't be surprised if he was sold this summer. So although United have a lot of wingers, Forsen is within that, you know, he's within that group. And I think, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Palestri and Ahmad both left the club permanently this summer when suddenly your options are opening up and your opportunities are opening up for him. And you know, he played a lot in pre-season. He's been around it a few times this year. I think he's not a million miles away. So I think, you know, I don't see why he necessarily wants to go and play. I know he's 19. And I think we've seen with Ten Hag that even if Forsen signed a new three-year contract, if he does another year and it's not quite working, Ten Hag would sell him at 20. We've seen him do it with countless academy graduates over the last 2 years. So I don't think by staying, he's necessarily having to commit to 3 years of being stuck in the 23s, if that's what you think is going to happen, because if that does happen, I think they will just sell him. So, yeah, I don't think he's far away, and I think he's, you know, with Palestri, there's nothing else to see there now, as that we've seen.
I mean, the fact that this will be his third loan says a lot. I mean, how many times is a player going to go on and progress at Manchester United after going on loan three times? It's very unlikely, isn't it? And the standard of those spells, yeah, all those spells have been in La Liga, and he's not exactly set the world alight, has he, across in Spain?
No, definitely not. You know, with the Alaves, when he did 18 months at Alaves, and I think it was 18 entirely forgettable months. He was in and out of the team, out of it as much as he was in. You know, looking back at that spell here, there was 11 starts in the Liga and 22 substitute appearances across 18 months. You know, and that's with Alaves. I think that shows you where he is. And I know he's in the Uruguay team and has been in their squad and did all right at the World Cup, but I just don't see him ever making the grade at Manchester United, to be quite honest. So, you know, I think that's one player immediately that Forsen is going to jump ahead of in the second half of this season and probably come summer.
Lestri's very familiar, should I say, with the bench, and Martial's very familiar with the injury table. Everyone, he's probably spent more time on the treatment table than the pitch over the last few years. His time at the club's coming to an end. He's obviously out of contract. Ten Hag said that the club won't sign another striker this window. I mean, I wrote a piece arguing that should happen, and it's probably a matter of urgency, because if something was to happen to Rasmus Højlund, it could be a catastrophic situation, really, with Martial out for 10 weeks is the rough estimate, but it could be longer, which means he might have actually played his last game for the club. So what have you thought about that? Because I guess there is a bit in the background with FFP, and this window has been very quiet for a lot of Premier League clubs. It's not just been United. And we've seen what's happened with obviously Nottingham Forest, etc. And evident, of course, with docking points. So clubs, I guess the hands are tied behind the backs to some extent at the moment in the transfer market.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've mentioned on this podcast a couple of times how tight it is for United within those Premier League rules. And, you know, I'm still not sure there's fully an understanding within all of the fan base about how tight those things are. And if they miss out on the Champions League again this year, it is going to be really, really close on profit and sustainability rules next season. There's no getting away from that.
Well, you say if they're tight, but I mean, it's going to take a miracle for them to get Champions League this season. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. When? I mean, a couple of us did the stories in December when they got knocked out of the Champions League, trying to get a firm handle on it. And it's difficult to do because there's this £105 million loss over 3 years you're allowed to make. Although that is £15 million for United, or was, because the Glazers have put no money in. It was suggested that it wasn't as simple as Jim Ratcliffe then putting £90 million in, although he has obviously put that $300 million in, so whether that counts, not really clear, but...
Well, it was for stadium improvements and not particularly the first team, wasn't it? Yeah, the way that was sold.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's been none of that money spent yet on stadium infrastructure, obviously. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily as easy as that happening. And it was kind of suggested, once we tried to crunch the figures, that they maybe had about 30 million breathing space in December, of which 25 million was probably taken by going out of Europe. So things are pretty tight. And I thought Ten Hag's comments on Friday about signing a striker were pretty telling, when he was like, I looked and there is no space. There is no space within FFP. You know, that is, considering last year he managed to sign Weghorst on loan and Butland on loan and Sabitzer on loan. I mean, they were absolute pound shop loan deals, weren't they? But they found enough space for that. Now they're basically saying, we can't even do that. We can't even bring Boot Weghorst back on loan. There is not. There is basically not a penny available here to do anything. And I think that's pretty telling of how tight things really are. And we've seen these.
It feels like the needed one, though, doesn't it? I mean, if Højlund got injured, as I said, Joyce Dougal's on loan at Burton. Charlie McNeil's just came back after a disappointing spell with Stevenage. He didn't get a game there. And he's going to play with the under-21s for the remainder of the season. So they've actually got no cover attacking-wise. Marcus Rashford could play there, but he prefers the left and he's out of sorts anyways. I mean, you could be playing Anthony's a number nine, false number nine, perhaps, if Højlund got
it. Or Ahmad. I think Ahmad.
Yeah, it's a good show. Yeah.
I think he did it quite a bit at Sunderland. But I mean, the reality is they've got 17 league games left and maybe four in the FA Cup potentially. So like 20, 21 games maximum left. I mean, if Højlund stays fit, he could start all of them. They've shrunk their schedule very impressively this season. So, you know, there's not an issue there where you need loads of rotation. And
I don't think it was intentional, but they can have.
No, I don't think it was intentional, but it's kind of worked for them. And you know, you mentioned they do kind of need someone, but what has Martial contributed in the first half of the season that they're going to miss in the second half of the season? I mean, nothing basically. So I think, you know, I can say it's a gamble. I mean, if there's nothing there, then it's not a gamble. The gamble would be signing a striker and getting yourself docked 10 points next season. So I think, you know, they're probably making the right decision. And obviously it would be incredibly unfortunate now if Højlund injured himself on Thursday night and was to miss 3 months. That would clearly be disastrous, but they will just hope that doesn't happen. And like you say, they have got Rashford there to fill in if need be, even though he doesn't like playing there. And obviously he is got his own issues to contend with at the moment.
Lovely little segue, Ty. I'm not sure if you actually realised I was going to ask you about that next. You probably did. Obviously, there's a club statement on Monday night. He will be available for Wolves again on Thursday. They've said it's the internal matter is closed and Ten Hag has dealt with it. What have you thought about the handling of it? I've saw some supporters praise the handling, some supporters kind of disagree with it. But at the end of the day, I guess this is a player who is going to be available for the remainder of the season. You do kind of have to move on. You do have to handle it. You can't really rumble on, can it? And I think when something happens at Manchester United, it's always a huge story. You look across the city at Kyle Walker, Tyrone, and what's been happening with him and his family and the story in the Sun. For some reason, I think Rashford's actually getting more coverage. And I know it's a different story, but that's just really interesting how the two different clubs are covered in the media.
Yeah, it is. But I think, you know, a lot of the Walker stuff is kind of personal issues, isn't it? I mean, when Walker had his own night out issue, we say, last year, when, you know, he was pictured showing more than he should in a bar, that got a lot of coverage. That was a constant question to City and to Guardiola. So you know, that did get coverage. That wasn't like he was, obviously what he did there was wrong, but it wasn't like he did it the night before a game and then phoned in sick and missed training. I mean, what Rashford's done is dreadful, really. I mean, if you got out in Krakow and missed your flight home and phoned in sick, it's disciplinary offence. It's borderline
cross misconduct.
Undoubtedly. So, you know, for Rashford to do it, I mean, I just put in a piece this much time. Simply, it's not what elite footballers do. And if he wants to be an elite footballer, that's not how you behave. And that, there's no issue with him going to Belfast and seeing Rashawn Williams. And if he'd just gone there, seen an old mate, posed for photos with those young players at Larne, come home, like, wow, what a great story. Nice going to see his mate in Belfast, someone he's kept in touch with from the academy, who's had a very different career path to him. Great stuff. But then he stays, goes out seemingly for two nights in Belfast and then phones in sick for training. I mean, it is beyond belief, really. And nothing he has done this season brings him any kind of leeway from a disciplinary point of view at all.
But do you not think it kind of explains... this kind of behaviour explains what he's done this season. I mean, we've been scratching our heads on the podcast each week for the first quarter of the kind of figuring out why Rashford was playing like this, why there was such a drop off. And it's clearly, I mean, we were suggested there's obviously something probably going on behind the scenes, personal issues. He's obviously not in the best place at the moment because he's acting a bit out of character. I think Gary Neville was on BBC Breakfast this morning and he suggested, if you keep on doing things like this, obviously remember he was out after the Manchester Derby defeat, people are going to start thinking that is your personality and it will become your personality.
Well, it is his personality, though.
Well, yeah, you could argue it is now.
He's
26. He's not young anymore. He's an experienced player. He knows what he's doing.
You know, you're going to say he's done a lot of good work off the pitch there, I presume, which he has, but the two things can be true. You know, he can do a lot of good work off the pitch, but also this can be his character. And, you know, the birthday night out was ill-advised. I think it's probably fair to say. And I mean, this was ill-advised, does not even cover this. It was just, you know, sheer stupidity. At a point as well, when you've had no game for 2 weeks, to be doing it the night before a training session.
Well, it was a winter break. There's just been a winter break. If you're going to do it, if you want to blow some steam off, do it then.
It makes no sense. And he is, you know, he is at times the jewel in the crown of that academy. You know, that academy is very close now, one or two players away from the 250th. Academy player to make their debut for the club. It's going to be a huge thing when it happens. There's going to be a lot of fanfare when it happens. And Rashford's name is going to get mentioned as one of the great success stories of that academy. But at the moment, he is a dreadful example to the young players coming through that club, trying to make it to the first team. There is no getting away from it. And he's looked totally disengaged on the pitch this season. You know, forwards are going to miss chances. No one expects you to be perfect there. You know, he's struggled in front of goal this year. That's fine
in a way.
It's
his body language, his demeanor, the way he's sulking, isn't it, though?
Yeah, and there's certain things that can happen to any footballer. That is fine. But there's certain things that are non-negotiable, such as your attitude, your work rate, your professionalism. And those three just aren't there. They're just not there for him. And that is a major problem. And, you know, we spoke about those profit and sustainability rules a minute ago. I mean, selling academy graduates is a golden ticket. It was in terms of those rules. And United have to be very, very close now to saying enough is enough with Marcus Rashford, because his performances just do not warrant the amount of rope he's getting. It's absolutely crazy. And I know he's been disciplined for this and was disciplined for missing a team meeting last season. I mean, people have missed team meetings, those things happen, but you know, it's like I say, it's becoming a story too often with the night out after the derby with this. And he should be, like I say, he should be the jewel in the crown at that club. He should be the player that everyone is putting on a pedestal, that people are looking at and young players there are looking at going, I want to be like him and this is what I have to do to get to that level. But it's not there, is it? Because young players are looking at it thinking, all right, so I can go out clubbing in Belfast the night before training. It's just, you know, that's not what being an elite footballer is about at the moment. So
the club statement said he's taken responsibility. What that actually involves, we're not sure yet. No. The question has been asked, obviously, to the club. They've not confirmed whether that's a fine or another consequence, for example. but he needs to take responsibility himself in his personal life. He's obviously not surrounded by the best people, is he? Obviously, his brother's his agent, but from the reports that have come out and the suggestions of that night in Belfast, it seems like he's not exactly mixing with the best crowd. And being a professional footballer, if you've got a lot of money, it's obviously going to go to your head to some extent in the way you live. But you need to remain grounded, and you do that by having good people around you, don't you? Friends and family and your entourage, etc. And I don't think Rashford has that, unfortunately, and that's definitely contributing to the problems.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, it is difficult. There'll be a lot of people who'll be like, you know, the privilege and the money he earns. He's still a human being at the end of the day. There's still a temptation there to go out. You still want to be able to enjoy your life and to celebrate your birthday. It is difficult. You know, nobody should play that down. That it is, as much as the money is great, being in the public eye that much, being in the spotlight that much is not easy for anyone. So I don't think anyone should play that down. But I would say if you want that career, then you have to live your life differently. There's just no other way to it. And if you don't live your life differently, then you might still have a career, but you just won't reach the heights that maybe your talent would have taken you to. And at the moment, I think that's where we are with Rashford. He's 26 and he had a brilliant season last year. He's having a dreadful season this year. He had a dreadful season the year before last year. So that's two bad seasons in 3 years. The season before that, I think maybe the two seasons before that were both pretty good. But at 26,
well, he has these in and out seasons, doesn't he? Yeah. It's almost a pattern. Has a fantastic season and drops off, a decent season and reverts again, progresses.
The players he will be modelling himself on and believing he's in the same category as are having season after season after season after season where they are playing at the highest level, and Rashford isn't. And he's, you know, he's at that age now. He turned 26 in October, where the consistency has to be there. It just has to be there. And things like this and off-field escapades like this, just that they don't help him, and they present an image of a player whose head just isn't quite in the right place to be a world-class elite footballer and to make the most of his talents. That's just where it feels like he is at the moment. Maybe he'd argue against that, but you know, it does feel like something has got to change. Either maybe he needs to move on. Maybe the Goldfish Bowl of United and being that academy graduate and that, you know, that one that everyone looks at, that shining example. Maybe that's a negative for him in a way. You know, maybe he does need to cut the umbilical cord and move on, and maybe United do. But at the moment, it does feel like it's a story of talent that's you know, maybe not entirely wasted, because we've seen what he can do last year. He's already had a pretty good career, but you know, talent that's definitely not season after season getting to the level it should do.
Yeah, you don't want him to come to the end of his career and look back and have regrets, but at the moment that's the way it's going, unfortunately. Like I say, he's 26 and he needs to behave better, the bottom line. We'll leave it there for part one tonight, and we'll be back in a moment for part two.
No one covers Manchester United quite like the Manchester Evening News, and we have launched our brand new MUFC Pro app. For just £19.99 for an entire year, you can get access to all of our podcasts, our articles, and an ad-free experience, all at the touch of a button in the palm of your hand. And it gets even better. Until the 1st of February at 11 p.m, if you sign up, you will pay nothing for 6 months, giving you full, unprecedented access to everything the app provides, including articles that you can listen to when on the move. Don't miss out. Sign up today and we will see you there.
As we mentioned in the intro to this podcast, we're going to rank all of the signings, 60 signings of the post-Sir Alex Ferguson era. So like I said, there is 60, and Ty has got 60 seconds to name as many as he can. Now, I hope there's not been any cheating before this podcast, Ty.
There might have been.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, but I hope you haven't had a deep dive.
We needed Samuel on this podcast, really, because he would probably name, I would say, at least 50 of them within the 60 seconds, whereas I think I might struggle to get to 20.
When the idea was floated, I did think Samuel would bang them out pretty quickly. I think if you go through it chronologically, it's probably easier, isn't it? If you go through it seasons, you could probably get the last 5 or 6. And then after that, it probably gets a bit difficult after that. But a producer is going to start the stopwatch, Ty, and I'll let you go at it.
Well, let's go with this season. Hoyland, Mount, or Ten Hag signings. Hoyland, Mount, Martinez, Casemiro, Varane, Dallo, Wan-Bissaka. They've named the current team now because it's the easiest way to do it. Luke Shaw, Fernandez, Eriksen, Malacia, Bayinda, Tom Heaton, Garnacho, I presume would be one. Presume we're counting Garnacho. Anthony, Palestri, Ahmad. Let's get a few older ones now, shall we? Mata, Schweinsteiger, Nidalin, Ibrahimovic, Falcao, Di Maria, Depay, Sanchez, Sancho.
On 26.
26. Oh. Victor Valdez.
Time's up. That's an all right. That's a valiant effort, I'd say. It was an interesting tactic starting by listing the... I thought you were going to go chronologically each season, but you just went for the current squad, yeah. And then realised you probably need to...
Yeah, I mean, I missed Harry Maguire out of the current squad and Lindelof, but yeah, I folded under pressure a little bit there.
Related with that, Ty, we've been asked to rank the best five of those and the worst five of those. So would you like to list your best five first? I'll compare them to mine. We'll go into the worst ones after that and we'll discuss them.
Yeah, I mean, the best five is a lot harder than the worst five, isn't it? It'd be fair to say. I mean, Fernandez has got to be the best, I think. So he's definitely on there. And then I went for Shaw. I think Luke Shaw deserves to be on there. Zlatan, I think, has got to be in the top five.
Just to clarify, is this in order for you? Are you listing them in order?
I suppose that's kind of the order so far. One, two, three, yeah. I would be open to arguments about the order, but I think Fernandez, Shaw and Ibrahimovic are probably the top three.
They're my top three, yeah.
They're your top three. I went for Lisandro Martinez fourth. And the fifth, I did go for Garnacho. The fifth is one I found really, really difficult.
Well, I went Garnacho for my fifth as well.
Casemiro would have been in there like 6 months ago, but...
Even Martinez would have been in there 6 months ago for me, but it's been, Bruno fault of his own. He's been injured for a large part of this season. Still. Yeah, I actually put Joao Mata in fourth for mine. I had Luke Shaw third, Ibrahimovic second, and Garnacho fourth, purely because of the fee Garnacho was signed for. I think it was under £500,000, obviously from Atletico Madrid, and we've not saw his full potential yet, but there is so much potential and so much there to work with over the next few years that could be an absolute bargain, couldn't it, really, in this modern market?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it does feel like he's one of those, anyway. It doesn't feel like, you know, he was an academy signing, I guess, so he kind of feels different to all the other players, but the impact he's had already, you know, for like I say, was he £400,000, something like that? I mean, that was worth it for the goal at Everton alone, wasn't it? Everything after that has been, and before that, feels like a pure bonus. So, yeah, I think, excuse me, if you are including him, he's got to be in there. And I can see your arguments with Mata, but...
I think in a different time, he would have... He'd sang during Ferguson's years, for example.
He had some nice moments.
He's been a fantastic player. Yeah, you think of Anfield, for example, almost 300 games, over 50 goals, 3 trophies.
Yeah, he was a great survivor, wasn't he? And like you say, maybe the Anfield contribution alone should get him in the top five, given how sparse success has been over the last decade. But yeah, I had Martinez in there, and it is still fairly early to judge, I guess, but it does feel like he's going to be an important player, and I think we've seen already how badly United have missed him, and even coming back the last couple of games, and you know the half an hour ahead against Tottenham, they improved so much defensively, I thought, when he came on. So yeah, I put him in there, but I do think that the best five is probably it's easier to get in the best five than the worst five, isn't it? You could probably do worse 25, to be honest.
Well, we'll come on to that in a moment, but it's interesting that we agree on obviously four out of the five. Fernandez is both of our top picks. I mean, he has been given a bit of stick this season, who kind of hasn't. I think his positional discipline has been brought into light, but when you look at his record, he obviously joined it in 2020 from Sporting Lisbon. He's just been fantastic, hasn't he? You look at his stats, obviously his numbers were better back then. His output's probably reduced in the final third over the last couple of years, but I'd argue he's actually become a better all-round player for me.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's the best player in that team. There's no doubt about it. And he's been the best player in that team for 4 years. He's a top class player. And like I say, he does get criticism. I think as much, the biggest part of that for me, I think, is his on-pitch demeanour. That is clearly, it's become sort of a, you know, we talk about it so much, it's almost a boring thing to talk about now. And he's, I don't think he's ever going to change that. And United are clearly never going to tell him to change that. But it does grate on people. There's no doubt about it. It grates on, you know, it grates on some United fans. It grates on all opposition fans. It was telling at Newport that, you know, within 60 seconds of the game kicking off, the Newport fans were singing, "Bruno, you're a, you know, can fill in the gaps."
Well, he's one of those players, if he's on your team, you absolutely love him. But if he plays for the opposition, he's going to get a bit of stick. But it is interesting how you said, and it is true, that even some United fans, their patience has started to wear a little bit thin, because it's just the way he talks to referees. When the cards are down, he sometimes rolls around. And he has this tendency, when things are going quite bad, he almost runs out of position, doesn't he? And tries too hard. And he kind of presses when the team aren't pressing, and it leaves it looking a bit dysfunctional in midfield and leaves space open. I think fans have noticed that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is when things are going wrong that he's not a great captain yet in those moments. He overcompensates. He tries too hard. And a big part of that is his sheer desire and his will to win, which is great to have in a way. But like we say, he overdoes it at times. I don't want to go back to the 7-0 at Anfield, but His second half was a disgrace in that game. There's no getting away from it. And, you know, he is still a bit too over the top with referees. I mean, the amount of bookings he's got for dissent this season is incredible. And it's just not going to help your cause, I don't think. And like you say, when you're winning and when things are going well, you probably love it. But when you lose, and when United are losing and fans are seeing that, I think there's probably a view that that's not the best way to be going about things. But I do think that is just his character, and he's doing it because he's so frustrated that things are going against him. So hard to be too critical, because at least it shows how much he cares. And, you know, that really is the only major gripe. I mean, his contribution on the pitch since he's been at the club is phenomenal. And in a decade where virtually nobody has lived up to their price tag, he has succeeded that and then some, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I completely agree. We've got Luke Shaw as well. We both had him. Signed in 2014, double leg break the year after. Obviously a fallout with Mourinho. He said a lot of interesting things about him. Didn't get along with Luke Shaw very much, I don't think, Mourinho. And he's had a renaissance since then. I think his character has been unbelievable. He's shown great resilience to come back from that injury, to battle through that with Mourinho, and then to become, the season before the Euros, it sounds like an exaggeration, but for me, he was the best left back in the world at that point. And when I've said that a few times, people kind of raise their eyebrows, but when you look at the competition in that position, that season, he generally was.
Yeah. Are you saying Dan Burns ahead of him now, Stephen? Is that why he's not the best left back in the world
anymore? Don't mention his name around me.
yeah, you know, he's been a great signing, and he's, the great thing about Shaw is that he has had some difficulties. You know, we spoke about Fernandes there. It's been plain sailing, really, for Fernandes. He was brilliant from the moment he came in and has remained either very good or brilliant since. Shaw has had some really difficult times. You mentioned under Mourinho, there's been the injuries. He's been in and out of the team at times, but he's shown so much character over the years to keep going and keep fighting. And
you're in danger of sounding like Brendan Rodgers there, by the way.
Well, I've actually got a couple of envelopes just here. Yeah, he's the character he's shown, I think, has been brilliant. A bit of a cliche, bit of a Rodgers cliche, but to keep going at a club where it's pretty hard to do that, as we've just been speaking about, is fantastic. Yeah, and on with you. That season, and even in the Euros, he was world class then. He struggled a bit the following season, as everyone did, but I think under Ten Hag, he's been superb again. And I think, you know, even having him back is going to be massive now. There's no doubt he's up there as he's one of the best left backs in the league at the very least. You know, I think he's in the
top. And then his
two
transition
or three
to playing at centre back was one of the stories of last season, if we're being honest. I mean, we didn't expect it, and it was flawless, really, when he came into that. It was around Christmas, wasn't it? And he kicked on, and he was ahead of Maguire in the latter stage of the campaign around spring as well. And he kept being selected, and he just kept on delivering. He was fantastic. He's technically a very, very good player, and that's why he can kind of adapt to that role, isn't he? Ibrahimovic as well, fantastic first season. His second season was a bit disappointing, wasn't it? But came to the club and he was asked to score goals, and he did. He scored an abundance of them. I had my doubts whether he could do it in the Premier League, but he made mockery of those.
Yeah, he did. You know, he was a fantastic free free signing, really. I think it was, like you say, there was probably doubts when he arrived, but his impact was huge. I think 28 goals, something like that in his first season. A great contribution and just, just a larger than life character as well. He had an impact on, you know, clearly not nowhere near to the extent of Cantona, but he's kind of in that bracket, isn't he, as someone that comes in and people follow. And
he was a Manchester United player through and through, wasn't he? The kind of personality, the air of confidence about it. I just love that about him.
Yeah, he had that strut and that confidence, but he delivered on it. You know, the last decade has been a lot of United players who come to play for United and decide, I'm at United now, I've made it, I can have that strut and confidence, and have just offered and contributed nothing. Ibrahimovic had that, but delivered as well with the goals he scored, with his general performances, with his demeanour. He was an opportunistic and really good signing. I think he contributed well with the goals he scored, and also off the pitch with kind of that attitude. And he's a great player. He's a great character, but he clearly does things the right way as well. You know, he clearly, as much as like some of his quotes you read and a little bit corny and things like that, he lives the right way. And the fact that he was still playing in Serie A when he was 40, 41 is evidence of that, that he is, you know, he is a good example of someone who gets the most out of his talent and lives his life the right way.
You're 43 now, and when you play at 5-a-side, your back's very sore in the morning, isn't it?
Carrying you,
Ibrahimovic, for still performing in Serie A. And we obviously won the title with AC Milan as well, which is fantastic to see. Right, come on then. The worst five signings, this will be interesting. I imagine, do you know what? I think we could probably have the same five again. So I'll let you go first, list your five, and then I'll see how mine measure up.
I've gone for Sanchez, Di Maria, Depay, Sancho, and Pogba. I reckon you've got at least three or four of them.
I'm very surprised you've not included Anthony on that.
Yeah, I was tempted to. I think he'd probably be number six, purely because you've got a goal and assist at the weekend. So I thought maybe.
Was that in chronological order? Our podcast producers just asked. That was in no. You can leave that out for a second because I'll list mine, and this is in no particular order as well. But I went for Anthony, Sanchez, Di Maria, Schweinsteiger, and Sancho. Which is that a bit harsh on Sancho, I thought?
Yeah, I mean, Sancho's the one where, like I said, I didn't really include Anthony because he's still at the club. And like I say, he got a goal and assist at the weekend, albeit, you know,
against the season, League 2 opposition, Newcourt, yeah, who are toward
there was a lot
relegation
of,
places.
A lot, yeah, of social media wags suggesting he found his level, which is probably a little bit harsh. But it'd probably be number six on my list. I think he wasn't far off being included. Sancho, I think for the way it's turned out so far, I just felt he had to be on there. There's still a slim chance that he comes back and things turn around. But for the fee they paid and the excitement that signing generated, I think it has to be in the bottom five just for contribution on the pitch. And the fact that they spent £73 million to sign him to solve their right wing problems, and then he said, I want to play on the left. And, you know, that's not fair to pin that on Sancho. I mean, United should really know what position a £73 million player wants to play.
When you look at his goal-to-minute ratio, it was actually better on the left than it was on the right. It didn't take a genius to work that out.
Exactly. So, you know, I think I'd have him as number four, maybe. Assuming we say number one is the worst.
But I mean, I can understand why you've not included Anthony in the sense that he's still in the club. He can maybe make your sixth position. But if you're going on the logic of value for money and the fee that was invested, £86 million, Ty. And I mean, one goal, one assist this season, and both against Newport at the weekend. We could have came on this podcast and it could have been, he still hasn't scored, he still hasn't assisted. I mean, it was a tap-in, wasn't it? Really hit off the post, ricocheted out. Hopefully he'll kind of use that as a springboard and he can progress. But I mean, I won't hold my breath, and he already feels like he's been written off, to be honest.
Yeah, I am pretty much with you, really. I mean, I do think that unless things improve, he will end up as the worst signing in United's history, to be honest. If this is his standard and this is all he can deliver, he will be the worst signing in United's history for the fee they paid and the fact that they could have had him for £25-30 million cheaper 6 weeks earlier and didn't go through with it. And said, you know, they said in July of that year, you know, Ajax want £60 million, it's too much, and then paid £85 million. So yeah, there is a very real danger that he isn't just on that list of worst post-Fergie signings. It, you know, we're in worst ever category with Anthony, but you know, the reason I didn't put him in there is because there might be more to come, and you never know. I don't hold out much hope, but I think he's got more of a chance than Sancho of prolonging his United career. You know, I don't think Sancho will be at the club next season. I think Anthony probably will. So that gives him a chance for something to finally click, to finally start delivering some poor performances. So, you know, he's trending towards that list. There's no doubt about it for me. But just the fact that he might still have another 50, 60 games to prove himself. You know, if those games deliver 2 goals and 3 assists, then we will definitely have our answer, I think it's fair to say.
Seems like the wing is just a problem position for United when you actually look at the players they've signed, doesn't it? I mean, it's not just been over the last few years. It's been, like I say, over the last 13 or 10. I mean, Di Maria, terrible. Alexis Sanchez, I mean, probably best remembered for playing that piano, wasn't he, in the unveiling video, then his actual performances on the pitch. And then Sancho, Anthony, of course, we've mentioned them. I mean, Sanchez was really disappointing, wasn't he? The form he had at Arsenal was just outstanding, and there was so much excitement around his transfer. But he just underwhelmed. He was just dreadful.
Yeah, he was atrocious. I think, you know, he's the number one for me. It's just a total disaster. And like you say, so much.
Why is it? I mean, to be fair, I was going to say, why is it? Why does it happen at United? But we made the point that it's not just United. It sometimes feels that way. But there is a lot of clubs who pay a lot of money for these top players, and it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, and I think there was a sense with Sanchez that maybe that the first half of that season at Arsenal hadn't gone well, and that maybe there was a drop off coming into his game. Maybe United didn't read the tea leaves with that, but the drop off was still astonishing. Given City, you know, City had not long before been pushing for his signing. But it is just hard to know, because a lot of these are good players. You know, Di Maria's on that list. Di Maria's had a really good career apart from at United. Really, you'd have to say he's probably not world class.
He's had a fantastic career.
He's had a great career, yeah. There's no doubt about it. He's had a great career, but it was disastrous at United. Yeah, he started really well, actually. He was, you know, you remember that chip against Leicester in that 5-3 defeat, I think it was brilliant. Started really well. Obviously, he really struggled to settle in Manchester, having his house broken
into. I was just about to say, I think that the personal problems definitely come into it with Di Maria, and his wife hated living in Manchester. Some famous quotes about what she said and some really not some nice things about the city.
Yeah, exactly. And he, you know, he really struggled to sell. And I think, you know, he was one of the had his house broken into, which is a, you know, it's clearly a major problem for a lot of footballers that live in that sort of footballer belt in Cheshire. So, and that did unsettle him, but, you know, it never really happened. And he was, you know, I mean, he's been absolutely hammered since in the times he's come back to Old Trafford. I remember Ashley Young wiping him out in the first leg of the PSG quarter. Around the 16 tie a few years ago, and the cheers that got. I mean, Di Maria has been slaughtered on the occasions he's played United since. But like we say, everywhere else he's been, his career has been pretty good, really. I mean, he was still playing for Argentina last year in their World Cup winning team. So there's clearly a decent player there, and a lot of this as well is like the curse of the number seven in a way. I mean, I've got Depay on there, so I can't remember if you had Depay on there or not. But you know, he's another who came with high expectations and was just absolutely dreadful, really. He probably came to United too soon, has since gone on to do, you know, not as good a career as Di Maria, but he's been all right. He's had spells where he's been really good. He was great for Lyon for a very long time, but probably came to United too soon and was just so far short of what you want from a United player, and especially a United number seven.
You ever mentioned the Schweinsteiger as well? I mean, he gets quite a few mentions on this podcast, actually, because of when Casemiro first arrived. Who was his debut against that, Casemiro?
Real Sociedad.
I'm only, there you go. Yeah. Because I remember, I mean, you and Samuel have told the story countless times. The chatter in the press box was, oh, here we go.
Schweinsteiger.
He was off the pace. He looked sluggish. Did not look the same player. He obviously went on to have a fantastic season, but those signs of decline have definitely creeped in this time around. And we've made the joke that it's probably going to be a phone call from Saudi Arabia if he doesn't improve. But Schweinsteiger was a classic case of that, wasn't he? He came across with a big reputation and didn't deliver, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. And like, he didn't make my top five, but it'd be top eight, probably. Surely they'd do my top five, because I don't think it cost them that much money. But, you know, there was no sense there of... That was one where United were slapping themselves on the back for signing a midfielder for Bayern Munich, and what a great piece of business they've done. no one ever in that club at that time said, why are Bayern Munich selling one of their all-time greats to us for not a lot of money? Like, why is this happening? Instead, they're like, what deal we have got here? We have absolutely got one over on Bayern. When in reality, Bayern are like, wait till he trains, lads. He's finished. So yeah, that was typical of United at that time, really. Like I say, he didn't quite make my top five list, but you know, he's definitely up there. But another one who kind of like Sancho in a way, but the excitement when they signed Schweinsteiger because of the name and what he'd done in German football was pretty big. But like I say, they just had the wool pulled over their eyes, really.
Do you know what I think's really bizarre? Is he's got a huge affection for United, actually.
Yeah,
it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, since he's, whenever it's Derby Day, there's always the Manchester Derby. He's always tweeting about United and he seems to kind of have a connection with the club.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, it is quite strange. He has, he does tweet about them. I think he's done stuff for the official website since then. So there does seem to be an affinity from him there, even though it went badly. Seb, the producer there, then the first ever German player, you know, not the success you want for your first ever German player, but you know, it did not.
I think players do actually take pride in that though, don't they? I mean, you heard Bain there, he's made that point a few times. He's obviously the first Turkish player to represent the club and obviously varying success over the last decade, but United are still the biggest club in England and some consider them as the biggest club in the world. And for players to have that on their CV is still a huge thing.
Definitely. Yeah, it does. To play for United is still, like I say, a big thing, even for someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger, who had the career he had at Bayern Munich, to have got to United is, and played for them is probably a big thing, even though it didn't go the way he wanted. I mean, the midfielder I had on my list, did you have Pogba in? I can't remember if you had Pogba on your list. Though.
Didn't have Pogba in. Just, I mean, we kind of explained on that. I think we did last week, didn't we? A week and a half ago, we discussed him a little bit.
Of the five on my list, he is undoubtedly the best player on that list and did the most for United. You know, he did far more than Sanchez, Di Maria, Sancho and Depay at the club. It's just the fact of, you know, letting him go for free twice and signing him for £89 million. I mean,
and he could have done so much more. Which is so much untapped potential.
Just never happened for him. And to lose him on a free twice is just, you know, feels disastrous. And in a way, it feels like it sums the last 10 years of recruitment up.
What are you doing in 10 years' time, Ty? Should we do this podcast
probably
again?
This podcast, and rank Ineos'
signings? Yeah. In purgatory with me for the rest of your life.
Maybe Newcastle will be winning the Champions League by then.
We've waffled on for 52 minutes. I'm not sure I've managed that because we didn't have much to talk about today. But thank you, Ty. I've enjoyed your company as always.
That's quite all right, Stephen. I hope your hangover is beginning to clear.
Well, I've just had 5 painkillers and a Barocca before coming on, so hopefully we'll start to disappear in a few hours. Wouldn't know if Rashford felt like that on Friday morning when he phoned in ill for training. Thanks to listeners as usual. Check out the podcast on all the social channels, etc. on YouTube, and have a great week. Take care.